Hello and welcome to the Avengers Assemble podcast. This is Van Allen Plexico with a special instant reaction show. I do these every so often, occasionally, when something comes along that I think is big enough and of general enough interest that it's going to make folks want to hear immediately. Hopefully I'll be doing at least one episode in the next few days with guests, and I'm probably going to appear on a show or two from other networks and other programs talking about this subject, because of course we're going on midnight Friday night of the weekend that Avengers Infinity War came out. I've just seen it, and as you might imagine, I have a lot of thoughts about it. So I just wanted to get this together as quickly as possible, my instant reaction, without having to sit around, without having sat around and thought about it, without having mulled it over at all. This is just going to be my gut level reaction to everything I just saw. Bearing in mind, this is a property, these are characters, this is a villain, this is a storyline, or was supposed to be a storyline that has been one of my absolute favorites for so many years, and I never dreamed that I would see it as a movie, you know, maybe as a cartoon or something, but never as a movie. This just is very mind-boggling that it even exists. So I have to say up front that I don't want to seem completely spoiled taking it all for granted, because you know this is something that there's just the mere fact that it exists. We have to start at that level. I mean, you know, like on a scale of 1 to 10, you can't just rate this movie between 0 and 10. You have to start out at 12 that it even exists, and then you're ranking it between 12 and something else on a scale of 1 to 10. You see what I mean? So, just the very fact that it exists is just mind blowing. But within the realm of, okay, it does exist, now let's actually evaluate it, I want to just make a few general and a few specific observations about it. Again, I mean, we have to move beyond the fact that it's just astonishing it even exists. We have to take it for granted that it does exist, and now let's evaluate how well it told the story that it seemed like it was trying to tell. So that's what I'm going to talk about for the next few minutes. We're going to move into some very serious spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want to have anything spoiled for you, I would suggest that you go watch the movie. It's in like every theater, 15 screens per theater. You shouldn't have a problem finding it. And then come back and you can listen to my instant reaction. The way I do this kind of thing is I'm going to tell you my... I'm going to tell you overall observations, a couple of overall observations about it. Then I'm going to tell you some of its strengths as I saw them, some of its weaknesses as I saw them. And then finally, I'm going to go over the poster, because I've always found when I do this, the easiest way to do it, to remind myself of what was in the movie, because, you know, when you see the movie once and then you get home and it's late at night and you're tired, it's hard to remember all the details. You know, you're still kind of reeling from the overall impact. You know, it's like getting hit by a bus. It's hard to remember what the number on the side was or what brand of tires the thing was running, because all you know is you got hit by a bus. So I'm going to go through this poster and look at all the different characters and kind of talk about my reaction to each one of those characters along the way as they appear as I look at them on the poster. So, all right. My overall, and we're going to move into spoiler territory immediately, so here we go. My overall instant reaction evaluation of this movie is it is not exactly Infinity War. We kind of knew that, right? We kind of suspected it would be more Infinity Gauntlet, and those of you who've read the comics know exactly what I mean. I mean, Infinity War in the comics was Jim Starlin's story where the main villain was the Magus, or Magus. I can't remember if it's Magus or Magus, soft G or hard G. I guess it's the Magus. Magus? I don't know. The Magus. Whatever. Warlock's kind of like evil counterpart, okay? And so because the main villain in that story was Warlock's evil counterpart, you got evil counterparts of everybody. So there was like an evil Spider-Man dude and an evil Iron Man guy, you know, and all that. So it's not that story at all. Plus, Thanos didn't even have the Infinity Gauntlet in Infinity War. It was, I believe Warlock had the Infinity Gauntlet in Infinity War. So this is really more like Infinity Gauntlet, where Thanos is out trying to gather up the Infinity Gems and then use them to become essentially God so that he can destroy half the universe. Now, his motivation is completely different, right? In Jim Starlin's comics, Thanos' motivation for doing horrible things like this is to impress a woman, right? He is literally, he's in love with the literal personification of death, in the form of a woman, sometimes a skeleton, sometimes a beautiful woman in a cloak and hood. So he's trying to impress and win her love by killing half the universe using the Infinity Gauntlet. In the movie, they try to make his motivations a little less esoteric and a little more relatable. He just wants to alleviate overcrowding and too many mouths, as he put it, you know, and he seems to think that the main problem that bothers the universe is overpopulation. So if he kills half the people on every planet, then the other half will be able to enjoy their planet more. Now, I'm not remotely convinced that that is a problem or that that's the solution for the problem, but he certainly seems to think so. It's also hard for me to understand how he could recruit an entire army of alien creatures. Not to mention his immediate lieutenants, those really powerful guys, to that cause. I mean, what's in it for them? Why do they want to kill half the population of these planets that he's going around doing? So I'm not quite sure I understand the motivations of anybody other than Thanos, and I think Thanos' motivation's kind of dumb. I preferred the comics version, although it seems like the critics all seem to like this version. And they're like, oh, well, Thanos, I kind of agree with Thanos. No, Thanos' motivation here is stupid, and I don't agree with it at all. The other thing in the overall evaluation about it, and by the way, I'm sorry that my voice sounds so horrible. I had a cold earlier this week, and I was really scared that I was going to be so sick that I wasn't even going to get to go to the movie tonight. But fortunately, I got over being sick by Thursday, but I still sound terrible. So my apologies for if I'm offending your sensibilities with my horrible voice tonight. But I wanted to get this done as quickly as possible. So this is a movie. This is a story where the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy team up against a villain who is portrayed as possibly sympathetic, possibly not, who is a godlike villain who kills almost everybody. But yet, this is not the Korvac saga. So I can make a very good argument that this movie has as much or more to do with the Korvac saga from the late 70s as it does with any of Thanos' stories. Because in the Korvac saga, Michael Korvac seemed like this terrible adversary, terrible villain, and the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy. The Guardians of the Galaxy aren't in the Infinity War or Infinity Gauntlet or any of that, but they are most assuredly in the Korvac saga. At a time when the government is also trying to boss the team around and messing with their lineup. So I would argue that this movie has a lot more in common with the Korvac saga. They just replaced Korvac with Thanos, but otherwise it's even has the Collector in it. I hadn't even thought about that. It's pretty amazing how many similarities it has. So, to the Korvac saga. All right, so moving along, let's talk about some strengths. I think that I'll first say this about this is about a 2.5 hour movie. It's a long movie, more than probably 2 hours and 40 minutes. Of course, you got to sit through all the credits to get to the post-credit scene, so you feel every second of those 2 hours and 40 minutes or whatever it is. It's not like one of these movies that has 15 minutes of credits, but you can leave or turn it off as soon as the credits start, because that shortens it considerably. No, you feel every minute of the length of this movie. Now, it does fly by. The pacing is incredible. This is an incredibly fast-paced movie. It zips right along, but But what I'm saying is you can't get up and leave. I mean, you got to stay all the way to the bitter end. So, and it is a pretty bitter end, honestly. So, in fact, I would argue this is very much the Empire Strikes Back of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because it's basically every Marvel movie up until now has been Star Wars. This was the Empire Strikes Back. And so I guess next summer we get Return of the Jedi. That's I think that's kind of how I see it, right? And if once you see it, you'll probably understand what I mean, right? All the other movies the last 10 years were awesome and set everything up. This is the dark middle chapter where the villains comes out ahead, and then, you know, hopefully in the big finale next year we'll get the right ending. And I suspect I know how that ending will go. And we'll talk about that a little bit before we're done. Again, I'm sorry if I'm yawning, but it is almost midnight now and I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning, so it's been a long day, but I want to get this in. So the strengths of this movie, I think, are in the character interaction and the humor. Oh, what I was saying was, about an hour into this movie, I was thinking, this is one of the best things I've ever seen. This may be my favorite movie of all time. This is amazing. But after the first hour, it really turns into just a running battle. And that's not a bad thing. It's just no longer a special thing. You know, I mean, there are some parts of the battle scenes in this movie that are unique, that were things we haven't seen before, and they're really powerful and amazing. There's also long stretches of this movie where it's cannon fodder getting blasted. And I mean, I know it's Wakanda and that's cool, and I know it's the Black Panther and his various soldiers and that's cool. I love the Dora Milaje and all that. They're all really cool. But I don't need half an hour of them blasting away at cannon fodder. No matter how scary the cannon fodder is, they're still cannon fodder. They exist to give the characters like the Black Panther and Black Widow somebody to beat up. And Captain America and the Winter Soldier, right? Because, I mean, Winter Soldier is a guy with a machine gun. I mean, I know he's got his arm, but he uses his machine gun. And he never does anything with that arm the entire movie. He doesn't do anything with that arm the entire movie. He shoots people with a machine gun on three separate scenes, and that's it. So you needed somebody for them to fight. You know, you can't have the Winter Soldier and the Black Widow fighting Thanos or his lieutenants. That's just silly. It's not going to go anywhere. So you give them somebody to fight, and that's fine. I just, you know, the Falcon is another one. I just didn't need to see it. I was just not that thrilled with it, as cool as it looked. But yeah, the character interaction, the humor, there's so many pairings of characters. Doctor Strange and Iron Man, their relationship is really one of the high points of the movie because they're so similar in so many ways. And yet, they have to get along, they have to cooperate, but it's not easy for them, obviously. Thor's reaction and relationship with the Guardians of the Galaxy is hilarious, and the Guardians are all about as funny and entertaining as you'd expect. Spider-Man is his usual charming self as a kid. The relationship with Scarlet Witch and the Vision, to me, is the high point of the whole movie. To me, the single highest point of the whole movie, and again, that may just be because of me knowing these characters and the characters that I love and everything. I love everything Iron Man does in this movie, of course. He's great. Captain America is what you'd expect, which is a very rigid, upright, morally, you know, good leader. But he doesn't really do anything interesting. He just kind of like is there being Captain America. Thor's become the humor guy and he's very good at it now. Black Panther's also kind of like Captain America. You know, you have utter respect for him, but he doesn't really do anything interesting. So, you know, that leaves you the other Guardians who are funny. Star-Lord's interaction with Iron Man is hilarious, and Star-Lord's interaction with Thor is hilarious. Mr. Lord. That was funny. Rhodey has some pretty cool scenes. But yeah, Scarlet Witch and the Vision, they have a number. They are way more in the movie than I expected them to be. And they do a lot more with their characters than I expected. So I was very pleased with the Scarlet Witch and the Vision's on-screen time and relationship and dialogue and just everything about them. I thought that was probably my favorite thing in the whole movie was Scarlet Witch and the Vision, which because I just didn't expect it. I mentioned on the preview show that the Vision on the poster is smaller than anybody, including Wong. And when you're even smaller than Wong, I'm sorry. I mean, everybody likes Wong, but he's like, you know, the least important, to a certain degree, least important of the major characters. When the Vision's even smaller than him on the poster, that's not a good sign for the Vision. But yet the Vision was very prominent in this movie, so that surprised me. The weaknesses, I thought that the main weakness of the movie is that the last two-thirds of it is just basically shifting from one battle to another, and like I said, a big part of those battles are just cannon fodder. So I could have done with a little bit less of the Wakanda battle. I just thought the Wakanda battle, I know it was set up to be like the big centerpiece battle at the end of the movie, but it just didn't do a lot for me. Other weaknesses, like I said, I didn't buy Thanos' motivation as much here as I do in the comics. I don't know. I guess when we talk about the characters, I'll see if there's any other weaknesses. Let's go ahead now and do kind of a quick run through of what happened with each character, because this will help us it'll refresh the memory of what went on. So I'm gonna start here at the bottom left on the poster. So we got the Winter Soldier down here first. Like I said, Winter Soldier in this movie, it's good to see him in Wakanda. He says, "I love this place." He's enjoying living there, helping people. He's gotten cured now. Shuri has cured him. Shuri's awesome. And so after that, and he gets a new arm, and after that, he pretty much just runs around shooting a machine gun until he disappears. The Falcon, we're getting to like the stock footage. The Falcon's fighting, and I love Sam, I love the actor, I love the character. I love that he had several Red Wings he sent into action this time. That was cool. My issue with the Falcon right now is that his combat is turning into the superhero equivalent of those scenes on the old 70s Battlestar Galactica where the Cylons would attack and you'd see the exact same shots every episode. They wouldn't like film new battle scenes. They just kept reusing the exact same stock footage of the battles. That's kind of what we have with the Falcon. I mean, you know, there's been at least one Marvel movie where the Falcon actually did some really cool stuff using his wings as bullet shields and somersaulting and everything. But here he just flies around and fires his guns and there you go. So same old, same old. Shuri. Yeah, like I said, Shuri is a really fascinating character. Everybody seems to like her a lot. She's kind of like the female Tony Stark, but younger. And got just as many resources and, you know, in fact, she's got a whole country behind her, not just a company. So she's in the position to be, you know, even more impressive than Tony going forward. And she's doing a key thing involving the Vision, so that's cool. Let's see, working my way across the bottom row, the Hulk. We get a little bit of the Hulk at the beginning, and then Banner can't get him to turn into the Hulk, can't get himself to turn into the Hulk anymore, and Hulk keeps saying no, and we never get an answer on that. Now, I gotta say, Jim Yelton was spot on when he said, remember Jim on the preview show said he thought that would be Bruce Banner in the Hulkbuster armor, and that was exactly right. That was a brilliant insight, I thought, because it was indeed Bruce in the Hulkbuster armor. But we never get any answer as to why, quote, the other guy, unquote, won't come out. Why won't he turn into the Hulk? So, don't know. But, yeah, I think that Ruffalo does a really good job. He's so understated, you know. he's a very sympathetic character, very understated as Bruce Banner. And he has really good chemistry, particularly with Tony. So I enjoy that a lot. The general, I can't remember her name, but the female general of Wakanda, she has a few cool scenes, but again, it's mostly action-oriented. But she's always good. Black Widow, I'm not sure why she's blonde in this movie. I really liked her wavy red hair in Iron Man 2 and Avengers, but she's got a short bobbed blonde cut. I guess because they've been on the run undercover and she doesn't want to look like Natasha. I'm assuming that's what it is. She gets to do some pretty cool stuff, actually, but again, it's mostly battle-oriented. She, and again, my guests on the preview show were dead on when they said that you had to have those lieutenant characters, Thanos' lieutenants, whatever they're called, because you have to have somebody fight the heroes that the heroes can actually beat, knowing that they're not going to beat Thanos anytime soon. So you need somebody for them to beat up on, and to beat up on them. And that was exactly right. That's what they were for. And Natasha gets a nice couple of scenes where she's fighting, I think, the female lieutenant person, whoever she is. They all have really wacky names that I don't even want to try to remember. So, I mean, I have no idea what their names are, but it's things like Indigo Moon and Hungry Star and Giant Maw and whatever. So that's fine. Whatever. I don't care. Interesting names. But yeah, Natasha gets to do some cool stuff. Spider-Man. I like that he starts out in the regular Spider-Man outfit, and then there's a plausible reason for why he's suddenly wearing the Iron Spider outfit. And I gotta say, the Iron Spider outfit works great, great in a movie. He needs, I mean, he's basically, he is basically little Iron Man in this movie, because he kind of has to be to fight Thanos-level villains. And so Peter gets to do some cool stuff here. Groot. The funny thing about Groot is Groot really doesn't do anything in this movie until the very end. For most of the movie, whenever you see him, because he's now adolescent Groot, for most of the movie, Groot is playing a video game. He's playing Defender on a little handheld thing. I like the idea that when we first encounter the Guardians in this movie, you're seeing how Star-Lord, Peter Quill's pop culture has started to infiltrate them. Because he's singing along to some old rock song, and so is Gamora. When we pan over to Gamora, she's singing along to the same song. See, so she's gotten infected by his pop culture taste now, too. She's not being aloof from him anymore like she was in the movies. Then you go to Groot, and he's an adolescent, and he's playing Peter's old video games. So, see, they both Gamora and Groot have gotten sucked into Peter's pop culture world, and I think that's pretty funny, because that would totally happen in real life, you know, is if you had a couple of people from somewhere else, and they're around a guy that's charismatic and entertaining like Chris Pratt, you know, you'd pick up a few of his eccentricities, like games and stuff, and music, I'm sure. Mantis actually got a couple of cool things to do. I couldn't believe it. I'm still not really sure what that character is supposed to be. She's not really anything like the one in the comics, but I mean, I guess the Guardians need another member, and having another female character is fine. And until we do the Celestial Madonna, I don't guess it being Mantis really matters. There's Drax. Drax continues to be hilarious. I mean, it's really hard to pick between among Drax, Groot, and Rocket who's the funniest, because it really kind of alternates. But honestly, I think that Drax may be the funniest, because Drax is so funny. Drax says things that nobody else could say, right? Like, think about this. Drax is this big hulking guy, a knife fighter, a brawler. No normal person in their right mind would mess with Drax. You just would not mess with him. He'd kill you. The only person he can't kill is a cosmically powered person like Thanos or Ronan or, you know, somebody like that. So against a normal person, Drax would kill you. And yet he has that thing where he's just totally honest. And so he says things that you just can't imagine somebody saying, much less somebody that looks like him. And it works. It's hilarious, that juxtaposition. It's great. You know, like where he's admiring Thor's physique. Well, any other male character that did that would come across very weird. But when Drax does it, he's so sincere, you know, he sells it that he's just admiring the guy's physique, and it's hilarious. If you don't know what I'm talking about, when you see the movie, you'll understand it. It's hilarious. I don't remember if I mentioned Gamora, but that's how late it is now. It's going on midnight, like I said. But Gamora is very important in this movie, and in fact, I was chiding myself in the theater for underestimating how important she would be. Because in hindsight, of course she's important. She's Thanos' daughter, quote-unquote, along with Nebula. And so I should have expected that she would play a really, really important role. And believe me, she plays a really, really important role. And she does it great. That was in fact, her fate was my first clue that this was the Korvac saga, right? Because, and part of the Infinity War goes like this too, or Infinity Gauntlet. But the idea that half the universe just dies, basically disappears, you know. In the comics, they just disappeared. Here, they kind of disintegrate into leaves or something, but that's fine. I didn't mention Rocket. Rocket's job in this movie, besides being the pilot and thinking he should be the captain now, the leader, instead of Star-Lord, which is funny because Thor calls him that, is that Rocket's role is to be is to trade lines with Thor, and he's a great. I mean, they're like two straight men almost, playing off each other. It's hilarious, and it's really funny that Thor keeps calling him Rabbit, which anybody else did that, Rocket would lose his crap. But with Thor doing it, it's almost like Rocket likes it being called a rabbit. So, you know, if Drax called him a rabbit, blood would be spilled within 5 seconds. So. All right, let's see. Working up to the next level, we have a slightly bigger characters here. Let's just go all the way across that part. You have Nebula. Well, Nebula. Obviously, in the original comics, Nebula had an important role to play in terms of who ended up with the Infinity Gauntlet. And in this movie, the only time we really see her, she's being tortured. But you may recall in the comics, Thanos had gotten mad at her about something and had turned her into like a zombie. So in that case, she was being tortured as well. So in both cases, she's hanging in the air being tortured by Thanos. And so I've got to suspect that she's going to have an important role to play, because this was really Gamora's movie of the two of them. So Nebula could have a lot more to do in the next one. Black Panther, T'Challa. Like I say, Wakanda gets to be the centerpiece of the last big set-piece battle. And Black Panther's in it, and he's a good leader, but there's not a lot of character development there or anything. It's just, there's Black Panther leading the way, so that's cool. Captain America was interesting. We get a little bit of a nod to Civil War in that Tony doesn't want to call him. They haven't talked in like 2 years. And finally, it's Bruce, I think, that calls him Hulk. And he's grown his beard out and everything. Again, I think this is because they've been on the run for 2 years. So he's trying to look different. He does. He doesn't have his shield or his uniform at all. He's not really Nomad. He's just like not Captain America. There was no Captain America in this movie, just Steve Rogers with some Wakanda weapons. And that was a little bit disappointing. Hopefully we'll get the actual Captain America in Avengers 4 next year. Thor. Did I mention Black Widow? I think I did, yeah. Okay, she's in between them. Then Thor. I'm not saying I love what they've done with Thor, but I will say that I'm glad they're trying to do different things with him, because being, you know, the long blonde-headed guy with the helmet and the hammer and the cape, in several movies, including the first two Avengers movies and the two Thor movies, that's well and good, but even if I don't love what they're doing with him now, they've turned him into kind of a humor character. At least they're trying to be creative and do different things with him. I like him getting the artificial eye. I thought that was cool. He's kind of like Jakar now from Babylon 5. So Thor is interesting, and that's good. Even if you don't love the direction he's going in, at least he's doing something different, and I credit him for that. Star-Lord, Peter Quill, Chris Pratt's character. He has some pretty good comedic exchanges with his own team and with Tony Stark and a few others. And you get the obligatory they meet, then they and fight, then they team up thing, which is hilarious. Let's see. There's War Machine. And he was all right. He got a couple of scenes. I mean, considering the movie wasn't going to be 6 hours long, they had to kind of squeeze everybody in where they could. So War Machine got a couple of scenes and surprised me. And so he's pretty good in it. He got some good action scenes, too. Tony Stark, Iron Man. It really was as much his movie as anybody's. I would say that he commands the screen more than anybody other than Thanos. Although I gotta admit, there was a lot more Doctor Strange in this movie than I expected. Now, I know he kind of checks out partway through for various reasons, but I was really surprised at how much of Stephen Strange you get. Wong, while we're talking about that little corner of the poster, Wong is... I like that Wong, you know, in the comics, Wong was like the butler or the housekeeper or whatever you want to call him. But here, he's like Strange's assistant and one of his only remaining, I guess, liaisons back to... back to the area where he did his training, you know, and so that's pretty cool to have Wong in it and doing stuff. I'll save Thanos for last. I've already talked about him a little bit. Then you've got the Vision and the Scarlet Witch up in the top left corner. And yeah, I mean, I still haven't quite figured out what they're trying to do with the Vision's costume, because... excuse me, I don't think his head needs to be a different color than his body. And clearly they want his body to be somewhat green, seeing as how he's the Vision, and the Vision's signature look is green and yellow. But it's like his head, other than the red face part, his head is gray. And gray just does not look good with dark green and red. It just doesn't work, so... But the Vision had a lot to do in this movie. The Scarlet Witch, I mean, she's gotten very powerful as she's learned to actually use her powers. She's become very formidable. I'm always amazed when I see her flying. I don't know if that's... I'm not sure if that's sustainable over long distances, or if it's more like she's hopping, kind of like a miniature version of what the Hulk does in the comics, where Hulk looks like he's flying. He's actually just taking these really long leaps, you know. But Wanda is pretty powerful. And we really see that in this movie. She makes shields. She blasts people. She protects people. She does all kind of things. She moves things around. She does a lot of things. The two of them together is really a treat, because I dearly love that couple in the comics. I'm happy to see it in the cinematic universe. I'm glad they went there. They didn't have to, but I'm glad they did. And then lastly, Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet on his fist, directly behind Iron Man in the poster. Like I said at the beginning, I'm glad that they tried to give him more in-depth motivation rather than just, hey, ladies, Lady Death, check this out, you know. But on the other hand, they didn't need to go backwards with it, and I'm afraid that's what they did. So, all right. Well, that's the characters. I guess I'll wrap up with my final thoughts about the movie. Like I say, it's the first hour or so is almost perfect, and I love it. Loved it. The second two thirds after the first 40 minutes to an hour, the second and third thirds of the movie, again, just a little too much battle. And then it doesn't even have a happy ending. It has a sad ending. Thanos wins. Thanos is making these very vague proclamations that it's hard to understand exactly, you know, what he's saying or what he's getting at every time. And we have the long extended bit involving him and Gamora, which is depressing and sad. And like I say, the big thing about it is I take this movie to be it's a lot of it's a battle, right? I mean, this is a cliffhanger movie. The bad guys winning at the end. The good guys and girls are disappearing, vanishing off the earth, about like I expected. And so everything's going to have to be continued next year. So we've got a whole other year to go. They've already filmed part 4, which is part 2 of this story. But we've still got to wait a whole year to get all the effects and everything finished. So there you go. Okay, so I guess my final word on this is a movie that, you know, I don't rate Marvel and superhero movies in with my other favorite movies list anymore, because they get there just like James Bond movies. It's like with James Bond movies, their very existence makes me happy regardless of how good they are. So I don't include them in the same roster and listings. I don't want to mix those. Same with James Bond, and then with superheroes, they get their own listing. This is not going to be my favorite Marvel movie. This is probably not my second favorite Marvel movie. It's going to probably slot in after Winter Soldier, after Civil War, after Iron Man, after Avengers. So, maybe I'm not sure I liked it better than Guardians of the Galaxy, honestly. There's, you know, I said on the preview show that there's something about all those movies. There's something about every one of them. There's at least one thing about every one of them that I don't like that keeps me from thinking, oh, this is perfect. And here I feel like it just kind of got a little cluttered in the second half, and that's too bad. But again, I mean, we've raised the bar so high. This is still a 12 out of 10. It's just I was hoping for a 15 or a 20 out of 10, and it's quote-unquote only a 12. This is a movie that I don't think is going to break the all-time record, because I don't know anybody planning to go back and see it. Not anybody that's told me they want to go line up and see it over and over again. So but it's still again, for the character interaction alone, it's worth it to see Iron Man and Doctor Strange, to see Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy, to see the Scarlet Witch and the Vision. It's worth it for those things. So, all right, we're going to let the rocket get on out of here, or the Quinjet, depending on which show I'm filing this under, either Avengers Assemble or White Rocket. I assume it's under Avengers Assemble. Those were my immediate gut reactions. I liked it. I loved parts of it, but overall I did not love it. I'll have to see it a couple more times to get a real handle on how I reacted to it overall. But right now I'm going to give it, I'm thinking 8 out of 10. I'm thinking 8 out of 10, but I'm not sure if I want to go 8. I'm thinking I'm going to have to go about a 7.8, maybe an 8. And most of those points come from that character interaction. So, all right, we'll wrap it up there, and I will return, like Thanos at the end credits of Avengers, I will return soon with an all-star cast of at least one podcaster to talk about to talk about this movie in depth in a discussion. So you guys take it easy. And Avengers Assemble, I'll see you all down the road.